absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Once again, Sunday morning, and happy Easter to you. And it's an appropriate song to go to that today. It's happy. I'm obsessed with this song, and I play it all the time to the sickness of my wife telling me, stop playing it. But it is what it is. It's a happy day. It's Easter. Kids are out of school, probably on spring break or whatever. Spending time with the family. And you are also listening to me here, and I appreciate that on this fine spring-type Sunday. I am JT, if you don't know, and this is The Master Plan. There's a lot of things going on. Before I go there, the number to call in is 347-637-3220. That's 347-637-3220. And right along with the show and that telephone number, which is the hotline of the fantasysportsbookcasino.com, that website is sponsoring both that telephone number and this program. I'm fumbling through my words, but I'm trying to get them out because I'm pretty excited about today. There's a lot of things that were happening yesterday and this past week. The end of the NBA season. I watched some very good boxing yesterday. Let me tell you, people, there was a great free. If you have Showtime, Showtime had a non-pay-per-view event. Three title fights, three different weight divisions. First the middleweight, then a welterweight, and then a light heavyweight. And in my opinion, the welterweight was the most exciting. Showed a little, the middleweight was and the old man of the bunch, the father time of the bunch, was the headliner on the show, and he didn't disappoint, even though there was a controversial judging of this fight for some reason. Don't know why, but we'll get into that also. And like always, I have a fantasy baseball league that I'm in. And for those who have listened to either the Fantasy, the FSP Cruise show, or who listened yesterday afternoon to the FSP show, you would definitely know that Vic and myself have a match that was taking place in fantasy baseball that started on Monday and ends tonight, whatever the last game is tonight, and he made a wager. And we'll have to wait and see. You know, I'll get into that after I get into the other stuff. But I don't even know what to go to first. And also the NBA playoffs started yesterday. And I don't know. I mean, you know what? Since the NBA playoffs started yesterday afternoon, let's go that route before we go to the what took place in the evening. Because the NBA playoffs started in the afternoon, and I think there was four matchups that were yesterday. And all of them were interesting, extremely interesting. Now, in each one of these, Toronto was hosting the Brooklyn Nets. Toronto Raptors were hosting the Brooklyn Nets. Quite naturally, the Nets were the lower seed. Toronto was the higher seed. Toronto was favored. I'm not sure, exactly sure. It doesn't make a difference to me what they're favored by. But the point is, the Nets go into Toronto and hand the Toronto Raptors a loss. Now, I did not watch this game. I did not see this game. So I can't comment it. All I can say is that they beat them by 7 points, which is impressive. But I do believe Brooklyn was not favored in this game. They could have been. If you know, or if you're listening and you know, then please let me know, because I'd like to know if they were favored or not. I'm not sure about that. I don't play basketball games. I really don't do any betting like that. So I don't know. But the New Jersey Nets, excuse me, they're Brooklyn Nets. They're no longer in New Jersey. Brooklyn Nets seemed like they played well and handed a Toronto Raptors team a decent loss. Now, let's go to the next game. This I did see. This, if you listened to me yesterday, I said that Golden State needs to win the first game. They absolutely needs to win the first game, and I thought they would win the first game. But I said they needed to win the first game, and the Clippers, which was odd to me, and I said I'd put money on it, that, and it is like the only thing I said yesterday on the FSP show that it relates to put money on a game, that Golden State needed to win this game, and I thought Golden State would win this game. And the reason I was saying that is these two teams do not, I repeat, do not, and I'll say it again, do not like each other, despise each other. They're both from the West Coast. One's from Southern Cal, the other one's from Northern Cal, and they don't like each other. And I saw an interesting stat. When Steph Curry scores 20 points or less, the Golden State Warriors' win percentage goes up astronomically. And you know what? Steph Curry only scored 14 points yesterday. And with the help of Chris Paul and company, and with the help of Blake Griffin fouling out of the game, Golden State Warriors go into L.A. and beat the Clippers 109-105. Now, two games played, two lower seeds went over the higher seeds. Can it happen again when Atlanta goes up to Indiana to play Indiana? Can it happen again? Well, at one point in this game, Atlanta was beating Indiana by 20 or more points. Roy Hibbert, at the end of the game, only had 8 points, maybe 8 rebounds, something like that, something crazy. Roy Hibbert, who's supposed to be one of the better centers in the league, with only 8 points. Atlanta goes into number one seed. Now, this is Atlanta, the number eight seed, going into Indiana, who's the number one seed. And I know if you've listened that, or you've seen that Indiana's record in the last 25 games is below 500. Below 500. And they haven't been playing well. It's been going on for at least a month. They haven't been playing well. And been getting beat by teams that ordinarily should not even be beating them. And I don't know if the coach or the players don't know what the solution is, but they have serious problems in Indiana, and they better quickly fix them, because this is the third game on Saturday that was played, and this is probably the more significant game. I understand that Golden State and L.A., the two teams, but I think this is more significant, because a lot of so-called experts and a lot of people were putting Indiana into the Eastern Conference Finals with a chance to go to the NBA Championship. They may not even get out of the first round. And what happens then? Does their coach get fired? What does Larry Bird do then? They better right this ship quick. Before they can blink twice, they'll be out of the playoffs, wondering what the hell happened. I don't know if they've been reading their own press clippings, or there's some dysfunctional thing happening with the team. Obviously, there's something going on with the team, obviously, because of the way they've been playing. But hopefully they can right the ship. Because if it ain't righted, it ain't going to get fixed, and they ain't going to move on. Plain and simple. Now, that's three games played. Three favorites, three higher seeds, and three teams that go down and are down in their home building, down 1-0. One gets beat by 7, one gets beat by 4, and the other one gets beat by 8. One more game to go. Are we going to have a foursome, or is it just going to be a triple play? Let's see what happens here. Now, I think Oklahoma was favorite over Memphis. Now, I do remember from yesterday that the on the FSP show, that Victor had told me that the Oklahoma City Thunder, was favored by 7.5 points, which I found that to be, I didn't think so. Because, and the reason by this, I know Oklahoma is a very strong team offensively, and they play sound defense. But I didn't think, because Memphis is one of the better defensive teams, that they wouldn't let this game get away from them by more than 7 to 7.5 points. Well, Kevin Durant scores 33 points. Zach Randolph does his thing, but he scores 21 points. And the Oklahoma City Thunder, with a record of 59-23, the Memphis Grizzlies with a record of 23-18 away from their home arena, and Oklahoma with a home record of 34-7, held serve, which is amazing, which is absolutely amazing. Now, Memphis, the best quarter was 31, where they closed the gap. At halftime, it was 56-34, with Oklahoma City Thunder safely ahead. But comes the fourth quarter, refound energy, refound focused with the Memphis Grizzlies, and they rip off 31 points to 13 points to, excuse me, cut the lead down to four. That's right. Down to four going into the fourth quarter. It was 69 to 64. Well, 65, I'm sorry. 65. Going into the fourth quarter. And all those bettors that had that Memphis Grizzlies with 7 points or under, or 6 points, whatever it was salivating, saying, okay, we're going to have a barn burner. We're going to have a tight game going down into the fourth quarter. Were sadly discouraged quickly. Memphis returned the favor to, Oklahoma City Thunder returned the favor that Memphis had put on them in the third quarter. Oklahoma City Thunder said, well, if you can do 31 in the third quarter, we can score 31 in the fourth quarter compared to 21 that Memphis scored. And the end result, Oklahoma City Thunder, 100. Memphis, 86, 14 points, doubled what the point spread was, and laid to rest any thoughts on Saturday that in these four playoff games that all the higher seeds would go down. And also laid the claim that even though you're Memphis, even though you do play tough defense, OKC is got high aspirations, and you got to do more than what you done in the past against us, because we don't play that. And Kevin Durant said, come on, fellas, get on my back. It's me and RW. We're going to take you to the promised land. And the big three of OKC came through. Serge Ibaka, 17 points and 9 rebounds. Kevin Durant, 33 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. Russell Westbrook, 1 rebound short, I'm sorry about that. He had 23 points, 10 total rebounds, 9 of them on the defensive side, which is damn good, and only 5 assists. With the bench contributing pretty well. 2 guys almost in double figures off the bench. So this is a well-rounded victory for the Oklahoma City Thunder. They don't play again. They played on Saturday, so they probably don't play again until they don't play again until Monday. The next game for the Brooklyn Nets would be on Tuesday. The next game between Brooklyn and Toronto is going to be on Tuesday, right along with Atlanta and Indiana. And on today, it's going to be very interesting. We have the Dallas Mavericks at 1 o'clock facing the San Antonio Spurs, with their big three, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, and Tim Duncan, going up against Dirk And I can't see this being close. I see Dallas giving a valiant effort. Probably, I would say this, probably in the first half and partially, I'd say probably two and a half part of the game, meaning two quarters and half of the third quarter before actually wilting, because against the will of the San Antonio Spurs. I can't see San Antonio losing. I don't think the trend that happened on Saturday is due to repeat itself on Monday. I mean, on Sunday, today. Some of these teams, these lower-seeded teams, may have gotten a burst like we can do the same thing that happened on Saturday. No, this is not going to happen. The teams that are playing on Sunday are more solid, with the exception of Oklahoma City that played on Saturday. They're more solid than the higher seeds that played on Saturday. San Antonio is a much more solid team than Toronto was. Quite naturally, everybody knows the world champions are a much more solid team, a more stable team than the L.A. Clippers, in my opinion. There's no doubt in my mind that Tom Thibodeau and company in Chicago are a much more stable team than the Indiana Pacers were up against Atlanta. And Dallas goes at San Antonio, and I don't think that's going to happen. Charlotte plays at Miami, and I don't think that's going to happen. Washington at Chicago should be an interesting series, but the tenacity and the intensity that the Chicago Bulls play at, I don't think they're a much more stable team, a much more solid team mentally and physically. I think they will win that. Now, this is a pretty interesting team. The last game, which goes on at 9:30, which gets and all these. The first game's on TNT, Dallas and San Antonio, 1 o'clock is on TNT. The second game, which starts at 3:30, is the Charlotte at Miami. They're on ABC. Washington at Chicago is the 7 o'clock game. They're back on TNT. And ending with Portland at Houston at 9:30, and that's also on TNT. This is a very interesting matchup for the simple reason I think this is going to be the highest scoring game of the four on Sunday, because both these teams rely on their offense more than they rely on their defense. So I think that the this game is going to be a very high scoring game. The fact that it's played at Houston is probably a good thing for the Houston Rockets. Now Jeff Van Gundy, an analyst on in the NBA, has said that he likes Houston to go to the NBA Finals. I don't know how they're going to do that. They got to go through whoever. They go through San Antonio, and the possibility of Oklahoma. I don't know. I mean, Houston doesn't play that well of defense. I mean, every team plays defense of some type. It all depends on what degree of defense they play. Houston's degree of defense is pretty low. And so I can't see them outscoring teams in every game because when you don't play that much defense, then you have to outscore them. You only have to have a few off nights or the team plays better defense against you and limits your scoring. Then what you rely on to win games is diminished, and quite naturally, you won't win those games. So unless they find the defensive god from somewhere and decide to play a lot of team defense, I can't see them going that far, as in we're talking about the NBA championship, like Jeff Gundy's talking about. Now, do they have the potential? Yes. Realistically, can they do it? I don't think so. But we're talking about game one at Houston against Portland. And like I said, I think this is probably going to be the most high-scoring game out of all the eight games that were played. The last game is probably going to be the most high-scoring because these two teams rely a lot on the three and rely a lot on transition basketball to get their points. And ironically, it's the last game of the NBA playoffs for the weekend. So I'd have to give it to the home team. So whatever happened on Saturday, as the lower seed coming in and winning against the higher seed, I think the exact opposite is going to happen on Sunday. I don't think that's going to happen. Especially, now, you can look at it two ways. The lower seeds of today that are playing saw what happened yesterday, and say, well, we could do the same thing. Conversely, the higher seeds that are playing today and saw what happened yesterday, saying, we're not going to let that happen to us. We're going to come out focused. We're going to sustain the initial assault by the lower seeded teams, but eventually impose our will and let them know we are the better team, and this is why. And summarily dispatch them the first game so they can go 1-0 at their home building versus 0-1 at their home building and have them scrambled to even a series in order to get the home court back. So I can't see any of these higher-seeded teams losing today. But if one was to lose, it would be the last game because the fact is these two teams rely so much on their offense and not so much on their defense. That's how I see it. I don't know if it's going to happen, but that's how I see it. Now, I could be mistaken. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you want to talk to me on the FantasySportsBookCasino.com hotline, where players win and winners play. Or I should say winners play and players win. With that being said, let's go to a commercial break, and we'll be right back.
If you're into fantasy sports, you're going to love the Fantasy Sports Show with host Victor Gardner and co-hosts Jerry and Black every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, featured at blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. This show is so hot, I can only play the intro.
Fantasy Sports and Policy.
You can also visit fantasysportsandpolitics.webs.com for archives, advertising, and other information. The Fantasy Sports Show. Information, motivation, variety. For a roundup of the week's events, interviews, and a whole lot more, tune in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern for the FSP Cruise Show, featured at blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. Here's a sample.
We have Mr. Stephen A. Smith. Hello, Stephen A. I'm glad to, this is Jerry, your host, along with my co-host Black and Jeff on here. Glad to,
What's up, fellas? How y'all doing?
What's going on, baby?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us.
Not a problem.
You can also visit fantasysportsandpolitics.webs.com for archives, advertising, and other information. The FSP Crew Show. Information, motivation, variety.
All right. We are back. Now, I just got finished talking about the NBA. All right? Just got finished talking about the NBA. Which direction do I want to go? Do I want to go talking about some football? Do I want to go talking about some boxing? Or do I want to talk about fantasy baseball? Let's go this way. Let's talk about some boxing. Now, Showtime had a free event on Showtime last night, starting at approximately 9:30. Three bouts on the card. Luke Konechny, Czechoslovakian, against Kid Chocolate. We also had, if that was for middleweight title. Then we had the welterweight division, which was Sean Porter defending his title against Paul Magnanti for the welterweight title. And then we had the old man of the bunch, 49-year-old Bernard Hopkins, going up against Belabut Shumnev. And let me start with the first event. This is down in Washington, D.C., the Washington Army, if I'm not mistaken. And let's go to the first one that we're going to talk about. That would be Kid Chocolate versus Luke Konechny. Now, I had never seen Kid Chocolate fight before. And quite naturally, if you watch the fight, you know that he retains his title, and it was a unanimous decision. But I'd have to say, at the D.C. Armory, the first fight on the card, I know he thoroughly beat Lucas Konechny of the Czech Republic. And he was overwhelming. Winner. But throughout this fight, there was boo coming from the crowd. For the simple reason, it was this. Kid Chocolate, even though he dominated definitely an inferior opponent. The guy was shorter, probably had to put pounds on to get up to middleweight. Now the Czech is a tough fighter. You can see it. He got pretty bloodied up in there and has some welts on his face at the end of the fight. But to me, Kid Chocolate seemed like he was a little lazy in his fight. Maybe he thought this was an easy fight. He just did enough to win. Now, it was scored 119-119 on two cards, 119-119 to 109, and the other card was 120 to 108. So it was overwhelmingly, and he connected on 403 punches to less than 200 from the Czech, okay? The guy, like I said, he was a tough customer, and you could see he came to fight, but he didn't have enough ammo to fight with. He was Quinlan was a taller fighter, quite naturally, with a longer reach, and I'll say this. Connecting, he said Quinlan is a good fighter and a good champion, but not a great one. And I totally agree with that. I'd have to see. To me, he would have to get a tougher opponent, someone that looks him eye to eye, not him looking down on an opponent, eye to eye, and bring the same intensity that the Czech brings, and see what Quinlan. Because to me, Quinlan seemed like he was content at times to lay on the ropes and just pity pat and not do too much, and he was very susceptible to some nice power punches, as few as they were, that Konechny threw. So Kitchoklin won the fight. He retains his title, but he's got a lot of work to do to refine his craft. I'll tell you that. Let's move on to, I think, the best fight of the night, the most impressive fight of the night, in my opinion. I watched this fight, and I'm telling you, people, I'm telling you. Sean Porter. Oh, my God. Oh, my. Paul Magnaghiatti, I could see the fear in his eyes as soon as he jumped into the ring. And when he saw Sean Porter. Sean Porter, as a welterweight, was huge. Huge. I'm telling you, this reminded me when he looked against the Paul Magnaghiatti. I mean, he completely steamrolled him in his welterweight title. He knocked him out in the fourth round. And it was all Porter. He left no doubt against Magnaghiatti. And if you know Magnaghiatti, the former two-division titleist who's also analyst for Showtime Boxing Broadcast, Porter might have sent him back to television work for good with a beatdown on the undercard. Porter versus Magnaghiatti, power punching stats. Porter landed 63. Magnaghiatti, 23. He threw 125. Magnaghiatti threw 65. He landed on 50% of what he threw compared to 34% of Magnaghiatti threw. There was no contest. I mean, he completely intimidated him, completely destroyed him. People, I'm telling you, this guy, the welterweight division, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? This kid is the real deal. The real deal. Now, he made his first title defense by outpointing Devin Alexander on December 7th in Brooklyn. On the undercard of Magliani's unanimous decision went against Zab Judah. Now, the first round was close, but he opened up a cut on Magliani in the first round. He rocked him more than once in the second round of this fight with rights and lefts. And I'm telling you, the way Magnaghiatti was getting hit in the second round, I'm surprised he survived that round and it stayed on his feet. And luckily the bell sounded because he was stumbling and bumbling going back to his corner. I'm telling you right now. That was in the second round. You know, and I said to I forget who I said it to. I think I just said it to that family over, not just to see the fight, but family over to just to enjoy each other and hanging out for a little bit. I said to him when that round was over, he ain't gonna last too long, and he kept on pounding him in the third round. He rocked him a few right times with some overhand rights. I mean, he was manhandling. This kid looks like, to me, a small version of a Mike Tyson. I mean, he's got muscles on top of muscles. He seems like I know he's a boxer, but he seems more like a bodybuilder than he was a boxer. This kid is all muscle, solid. And when he hits you, it's, oh my, you'd have to cringe, because the fact when he did hit him solid, I'm talking about Magnani, there were bone-crushing shots that I'm surprised that the boxer, Magnani, was able to stay into the fight up into the fourth round. And Porter, 24-0-1, I don't know how that one came there, but he was 15 knockouts, ended it in the fourth round by dropping Magnani with a clean right hand. And you can see that he looked barely hurt, and Porter continued tee off in him when the fight resumed before dropping him flat on his back with a punches onslaught of punches at the edge of the ring. The referee waved it off with a count at 1:14. Man, it was like, thank God, he thought he was going to kill him. I was screaming to the TV screen, stop the fight, because I could see that Magnani was getting overwhelmed. And this is a quote from Sean Porter: the objective was to use the jab and get to the body, and it all worked. The first knockdown, he knew that the right hand was going to come all night. I caught him in the back of the ear, but I knew it wasn't over. In the fourth round, it was a big right hand. He knew it would land all night. We kept throwing it. Now, Magliani was outspoken throughout the promotion, as usual, was humble in defeat, and gave Porter credit. This is a quote from Magliani. He has potential to be great, and I told him to go and be great. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I don't want to lose to an average champion. I want to lose to a great champion. I told him to be great. So if this is my last fight, I hope I lost to a great champion. I thought he would use constant pressure. I knew he'd come right at me, and he mixed it up well. He had a good game plan. If I had to tell you now, I'd say I'll stop fighting. I wish Sean the best. He deserves it. I'm telling you, people, I saw this fight, and I'm like, wow. You could see, just like you saw when boxers got in the ring with Mike Tyson, I saw the look of Magliani when he got into the ring, like, oh, my God, what am I in for? And it didn't disappoint, because Sean Porter brought it from start to finish. And whoever gets into the ring with him, I'm telling you, this kid, he can only get better. He can only get better, and I was thoroughly impressed. I don't know if I was looking at an overwhelming great champion that's going to be champion for years, or he was up against a very good fighter, or a fighter that was on a decline, and he just took a full advantage because he could. We'll just have to wait and see, and hope that Sean Porter does his thing in the right way. Now let's get to the light heavyweight, and that's the fight that the old man, the old man of the fight, of the card. This is a pretty good card. And it's one card that I really decided to watch because I wanted to see all three of these fights were interesting. And plus the fact is, it was free. It was free. One of the best prices you can got, and you got something for everyone. You got something that was light heavyweight, which was the main event. You got welterweight with some named fighters there, and you got middleweight. So you got something from everyone. You didn't get the real lightweights, but you got. I thought it was a very good card put together. Absolutely a good card with the like I said, the welterweight is probably the best. But I'd have to give a old living legend, still going strong at 49, Bernard Hopkins. He added yet another piece of history to his bulging resume that makes him a shoe-in first ballot Hall of Famer as he outpointed Belibut Shumanev to unify light heavyweight world titles at the D.C. Army. Now, two judges had it at 16-11 for Hopkins, while a third, Gustavo Padilla, had it 10-13 for Shumanov. A scorecard that will go down among the worst in modern boxing history. Even Shumanov didn't think he won the fight. Now, how the heck... Sorry about that. I got to drink some water here for a minute. Now, if the boxer didn't think he won the fight, how the heck does a judge give 14-13 to the loser when the other two judges clearly saw that Hopkins was the easy winner here? 16-11, that's the easy winner. And you have it going the opposite way. You have it close, but going opposite way. Now, if it was close with Hopkins, okay, that's a point or two that you may have seen that the other judges did not see. Okay, I understand that. But you 14-13 for the loser? What? You know, that's why some of these boxers want to absolutely destroy their opponent because the fact is they can't leave this to the judges because you don't know what the heck the judge is thinking about. Crazy things can happen a lot of times, and this is one of them. Luckily, it didn't cost Bernard Hopkins a title. Luckily. Now, I didn't see this whole fight, unfortunately, but from what I understand, I saw the first three rounds, but it was clearly clear to see that Bernard Hopkins had the superior boxing talent. Now, I can tell you this. It started off slow, extremely slow in the first few rounds because of these fighters feeling each other out. Bernard Hopkins being the guy that starts off slowly. But I'd have to admit that I was thoroughly impressed. Now, from what I'm seeing here, he clearly outboxed him. I'm seeing that the power punching stats, Hopkins had 93 that landed compared to Shumanov, who had 67. Hopkins threw 182 power punches. Shumanov threw 332. That's a big disparity in throwing of the power punches. But he only landed 67 compared to Hopkins, who was a lot more efficient. He had 51% of his shots, power punches that landed, while Shumanov, quite naturally, when you only land on 67 out of 332, you're only going to get 20% out of that. And I think it's an absolutely amazing story that a boxer like Bernard Hopkins, who doesn't even have his own nutritionist. He handles his own nutrition, his own whatever, he handles it, is able to sustain himself for this long at a high level. And now he holds the unified light heavyweight world title. And I'm sure of this. You know, for those who were at the D.C. Armory in Washington, D.C., and watched these three fights, definitely weren't disappointed, in my opinion. Now, true, the Kid Chocolate Konechny fight could have been a little bit more exciting, but they did still see a decent fight with a, quite naturally, a favorable outcome for Kid Chocolate. They saw a dynamite fight, even though it was short, only up to fourth rounds of that. Sean Porter put on a display, a power display, on Paul Magnanti that was it was superior without a doubt. Without a doubt. I'm telling you, this kid looks like he looked like the little small Incredible Hulk, I'm telling you, I couldn't believe the muscles on this kid. A welterweight. My God. Packing the punch that he packs at welterweight. Wow. And then we go to the light heavyweight, which was the feature fight, like I said, Bernard Hopkins and Shimanov. Those who watched that on Showtime or were at the live event, in my opinion, were not disappointed and went away with a good feeling of seeing a good set of boxing bouts, and it was free. It wasn't a pay-per-view event. It was a free event. Now, I taped it. I'm probably going to watch, especially the Bernard Hopkins, I'm probably going to watch all three of these fights again. I got to sit down one night that I'm not doing anything and actually go and look at all these fights, because I recorded all these fights and look at them all again, especially the Kid Chocolate fight. I want to see exactly what this kid needs to work on. I think he needs to work on. I'm not a professional trainer, but he's got a few things to clean up if he wants to be able to sustain his championship. I know he's like 34, 35 and 0, but I got to question a lot of his fights on who he's been fighting. Well, it is what it is. All right, let me go through this. We're going to talk a little bit about football here, okay? Just a little bit. Johnny Manziel worked out for the Cleveland Browns on Saturday, and will meet with them next week. And what is this? I mean, Teddy Bridgewater was with the Jacksonville Jaguars for several days. Are they going to take Teddy Bridgewater with the first pick, or are they going to come around in the second round and try to pick him up there? Cleveland Browns worked him out on Saturday, and that will work. Watched him work out on Saturday, and they watched him work it out and on his pro day. They watched him work out in College Station, Texas, on Saturday, and then gave him a taste of what they missed at Manziel Pro Day earlier this offseason. Adam Schefter also reports that Manziel will be in Cleveland for a meeting with the Browns brass during the week. Once that complete, the Browns will have met with and or worked out all the top quarterback prospects in this year's draft. There have been reports that the Fresno State's Derek Carr has caught the team's eye, but any final decision will likely have to wait until the Browns have a full picture of what Manziel brings to the table. They have the 4th and the 26th pick in the first round and 3 more picks in the next 2 rounds. The Browns have plenty of options when it comes to adding a quarterback to compete with Brian Hoyer for the starting job. Now, they talking with Manziel, And that should play a big role in which of these options they wind up choosing. Okay? So they've worked out all the top prospects, or all the so-called top prospects. And are they going to take somebody in the fourth pick or the 26th pick? Like I said, there's other teams that if they decide they want to wait and try for the 26th pick, that the quarterback they may be sitting on may not be there. So they may have to have several options. All right. I've talked about basketball. I've talked about boxing. Touched lightly on football. I'm going to end this right now on fantasy baseball. Like I said, since fantasy baseball started, I was going to keep you abreast of what I've been doing in fantasy baseball. Well, let me tell you this. Today, this ends the week of the matchup I have with Victor Gardner, our esteemed founder of the FSP, and Mr. FSP, Fantasy Sports and Politics. And he happens to be FSP Blink and Die in our fantasy baseball league. Well, going into yesterday, we were tied 10-10. We have 20 categories, and quite naturally, if you win the most of the categories, then you're the winner for that week. And we've been going back and forth, him going up on me going up on him, starting on yesterday, Saturday morning, before the first game started, we were at a tie, 10-10. Now, if you listen to the FSP show, I had told him that it ain't over, and I had something for him. And I didn't think it was just braggadocio. I just thought that I would have a decent Saturday, and depending on how Saturday wound up, what my strategy would be for Sunday. Well, at the end of the night, with the last game in the books, Victor has 4 points. I have 15 categories right now. Now, I'm anticipating losing two or three of those categories. I'm not anticipating a huge swing from 15 to 4, which is what I have on him now, to him getting at least 11 of those categories to my 9. But we'll see what happens. I told him by Monday he'll be singing the blues one way or the other, and it looks like I'm the one that's going to be happy, but I'm not counting my chickens yet, because it ain't over till it's over. But I can tell you one thing. Right now, I'm a happy person, and that's the way we're going to end this show, with Pharrell and Happy. Tune in next week, same time, same place. We'll be talking about the last past week's events and also my fantasy baseball. Tune in on Thursday, which would be the FSP Cruise Show, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and the FSP Show, 1 o'clock on Saturdays, Eastern Standard Time. Till then, happy Easter, happy times. We're going to end it with happy. We are out.